Otherwise, I'll forget. Okay. Custom live streaming. Hey, where's YouTube? Oh, there we are. It just takes a minute.
Mm-hmm. Time to itch. My hair. Had it cut, actually.
It's like what you were saying about Skype.
Takes a minute. Exactly.
So there is a bit of a delay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So welcome, everybody. I'm here with Jamie. And I actually have not met him before, but he was doing a presentation at the Hypnosis.
Hypnosummit.
Hypnosummit, yes.
What happened?
I think there's a bit of a delay. So I'm just going to go here. We'll chat through Zoom rather than through YouTube. So everybody, welcome everybody. It's Marilyn Harris here of the Impactful Legacy, how to create that for yourself and your life and your business. And on the call today, I have Jamie with me.
Hi, everyone. I'm Marilyn.
Hey.
Are we still here?
There we go. Okay. Hi. How you doing, Jamie?
Yeah, I'm good actually. Really good today actually. Just went and had my haircut. It's been quite a while. You know what it's like in lockdown. Got used to not having a cut very often, but it was starting to look like Einstein to get out of bed, and it was really quite. Anyway, had that chopped off, and just had a quite a nice day really. And it was really, really sunny and surprisingly warm here in the UK. It's actually the temperature has really gone up a few notches, I've noticed today, and I just felt like it was summer again. So catching the rays. How about yourself?
Sorry, I don't know what's going on there. I didn't have this problem the other day. So anyway, that's awesome. I mean, I know haircuts are like, it's like, I really need one too. And it's just like, okay, well, I'm tempted to cut it myself. But anyway, so welcome, Jamie. And I really enjoyed your talk, like I said, and could you tell us a little bit how you got started doing what you're doing now? Because you're saying you're the doctor of ADD. So can you maybe tell us a little bit about that and how you got into it?
Well, first of all, I would love if people started calling me Dr. Vasilian, but I'm not actually a doctor. The doctor of ADHD. I suppose I'm the hypnotist of ADHD. Okay. So I refer to myself as the hypnosis for ADHD specialist. I specialize in helping people with ADHD, and how I got into it was, well, I was diagnosed with it myself back in 2004. Mm-hmm. And so I had the diagnosis, as you do, and then I had medication. And to be honest, I didn't want medication. I felt like I thought there were other ways to manage, control ADHD. And I'd always been interested in psychology, and I'd been through psychotherapy and counseling for in the past, and had results with that. And I thought I could kind of go that route, or there was, you know, maybe CBT or something. They gave me medication, and unfortunately, I was one of the poor responders. It did make me feel more relaxed. Mm-hmm. It did kind of calm me down because I was not as hyper, because I was quite hyperactive as well. Some people have hyperactivity and some don't. I definitely had hyperactivity. So the medication calmed me down, but it did feel to me, there were side effects. I also kind of felt like I was on a drug, and there were side effects. So I had constant dehydration, and headaches and heart palpitations. And I, it was my personal choice. For me, it was too much. And I came off the medication, and it was a bit like being out on a limb. It was like, well, what do I do now? You know, tried the meds. They weren't for me. And many people held medication as a miracle. For many people, it's like a life savior. For me, it was not that. And so I was in that 20% who have either side effects that are considered to be too severe that they decide they don't want to take or can't take medication. And then in that 20% bracket, there are some people that don't want to take medication, just out of personal choice. So I was kind of in both those groups. I didn't want to take medication, then I did, and then I had the side effects. And for me, they were severe, and I decided to stop. So what happened was, I didn't know exactly what to do at that point. Now, what do I do? I didn't know, but like, I guess not being able to benefit from medication, maybe it was part of how I ended up where I am today, because it felt like I went out on a limb, and a bit of a wing and a prayer, I suppose. I felt like, oh, there's got to be something else. There's got to be some answer to this. And it was funny enough, not long after that, I did go to counseling. And you know what counseling or psychotherapy can be like, that you can be. So with this particular therapist, I think I had a few sessions, and he was just taking notes. He was taking a history. And I at the time, I was also not working. It was part of my ADHD, was that I found it very difficult to get up in the morning. I would oversleep. I had insomnia. And because of my symptoms overall, I was just really bad at going to work. So I was out of work. I was out of work in total for about a decade. Anyway, I went to a psychotherapist again. He was taking a lot of notes. And I remember being there in my second session, and he was still taking notes. He was just asking me, you know, about my childhood. And I'm sat there thinking, yeah, but this isn't relevant. It's not relevant anymore. I've gone through therapy for that particular problem, all this emotional stuff from when I was a kid. And his response, when I said that to him, he said, well, what we believe is that, you know, if you're back in therapy, then you haven't fully resolved it, that maybe we need to go deeper and we need to go back over the same ground. And I just thought, this isn't for me. And I'm quite outspoken. And I was, you know, I was a lot younger then. I was 24. So I said, I've been here for two sessions, you know, and I'm paying a lot of money, and you're still, I just feel like you're still taking notes. And I feel absolutely terrible. I feel worse than before I got here. And of course, it's the old thing. Well, you're going to feel a lot worse before you get better. But I guess having ADHD, part of what I wanted was that it wasn't really so much about my childhood per se, as about the practicality of having this kind of brain and how do I do those practical things that everyone does, like get out of bed and get to work. You know, it was just on that level. And I guess maybe psychotherapy has its uses, but this wasn't really the right treatment for me. And so I just got up and said, that's it. Sorry, I got to go. So I said no to medication, but I feel like a choice because of the side effects. And then I was saying no to psychotherapy because, again, it wasn't appearing to help. And I was spending a lot of money on something that wasn't getting me anywhere. It was making me worse. So I left. And I remember walking out, and it's really funny. I walked out with a sense of almost pride, like, yes, I said no, and, you know, like, I've got my freedom now and I'm walking away. Maybe it was because I thought now there's enough money on the table just to be able to buy some food or whatever. But, and I thought to myself, maybe I'm also, it's just part of my ADHD, maybe I'm just arrogant and I don't want to listen to this psychotherapist, and I need to give it time and I'll get the results that I want from it. But it turns out that it wasn't that, because what happened was I walked off And I actually randomly came across neuro-linguistic programming, or NLP. Mm-hmm. And I started looking into that. And I practiced it for quite some time religiously. And I went from being what was like depressed to like happy. Mm-hmm. So I made this big shift. And then in 2006, someone very special came into my life. And you know what? I don't know if you had this in your journey. And we've all had this journey of kind of, mm-hmm. you know, being on the path of healing and finding our way in life. And mm-hmm. one of the things I've done, and people have said this to me, I've had a lot of family members say this. Well, if that worked for you, why did you stop doing it? Very good question. It's almost like, well, if it were, surely you would still be doing it. Are you sure you're imagining things? And I'm like, no, it worked. I religiously practiced NLP for 6 months. Mm-hmm. I changed my mindset and I was in a good place. Mm-hmm. But I stopped practicing. and it was like I went back downhill, you know? Mm-hmm. So what happened was 2006, someone very special came into my life and we felt like, almost like like I'd always known her. Mm-hmm. Her name is Sarah Bailey. And she became my best friend. Mm-hmm. She met me when I was in what I call ADHD hell. I was stuck in the pit and I didn't know how to get out. And it was, I'd completely given up. Mm-hmm. Like I say, I was out of work for 10 years. Like I said, I did the NLP thing. There was this like glimmer of hope, but I just kind of gave up on it and went on a tangent. And it's one of the things that people with ADHD do a lot of anyway. So maybe it was that. Mm-hmm. Sarah came into my life and it turns out that by coincidence, she was an NLP master.
Wow.
A life coach, mm-hmm. and a hypnotherapist. Mm-hmm. She trained with Jonathan Deluzier and Julie Silverthorne, mm-hmm. in the United States. And she did a course with them, their training, which is based on their book, which is called Training Trances. And so I was already into hypnosis. Funny enough, I've been practicing it since about 15. Mm-hmm. And I was getting some kind of results from it. Mm-hmm. But what happened was I met her and she had all of the training materials, and she had all the DVDs and the books and stuff from the course. And I said, could I borrow them from you? She said, yeah, of course you can. So I borrowed this stuff and I started to take notes and it was amazing. It felt like I wish they'd taught this at school or college or something. This is amazing. I've learned about them, like how the mind works, and it's absolutely incredible. And I'd had an experience previously. I think it was with, have you heard of Paul McKenna?
No, I don't think so.
He's like a British hypnotist and he was famous back in the day, he's still like an iconic figure in this country and I suppose around the world of hypnotherapy, but a lot of younger people would maybe not even recognize the name today, but he was the guy that introduced me to hypnosis when I was young. Mm-hmm. And my mum bought a video of Paul McKenna's when I was 15, mm-hmm. and I watched that video and I was hypnotized. I had the most incredible experience that I was, I'd done self-hypnosis, but this was, wow,
right.
I'm hypnotized. I was watching the video and I was kind of transfixed on the screen. I didn't blink for 30 minutes. And I remember, the only thing I can remember 30 minutes was a butterfly going like this, the water. And when the water came up on the beach on the video, there were words in the water, like something like deeply relax. Mm-hmm. But it came out of the screen in 3D. It just went boing, bounced out of the screen. And when I came out of that session, I thought, holy cow, hypnosis is real. It's a real thing, like on the TV, like magic. Mm-hmm. But I asked the question then, I said, but what else can it do? Can it, you know, just make you hallucinate? But can it do like helpful stuff? Mm-hmm. So fast forward back to 2006, Sarah comes in, I'm practicing that course. And at the same time, it's having an effect on me. Mm-hmm. And I started to practice on other people. And I started to kind of practice what I called real hypnosis. Mm. Like, you know, stuff that is really like, seems spectacular. Like being with a client and be able to say sleep and they do this in a session or whatever, that kind of thing. And obviously at that point, I was just practicing on friends and family, mm-hmm. Mostly friends, sometimes the occasional stranger. So I was what you think of as a hobbyist in hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah was doing coaching on me. Sarah was doing hypnosis on me. I was learning that. I was starting to do more of this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And my mindset was beginning to shift. It was still rocky. There was lots of doubts.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that, you know, yeah, okay, there's some results, but I can't really get out of my hellhole, you know, this bottomless pit. I don't know if I can get out of here. But then there were just like with the NLP thing I talked about earlier, there were these moments of seeing the light of possibility. And I suppose that kept me going, but very much having her in my life, that she was there to support me.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened was in 2009, I was thinking about going back to work, but that was really scary after 10 years. So I decided to volunteer as a way also to get a reference for doing different kind of work. Cause I was previously doing sales work before that. And I really didn't like it. It was stressful and I didn't really like it. I could be good at it. I could do it, but I didn't like it.
Right.
So, and one of the things that me and Sarah worked on was, Jamie, what do you really want to do with your life? Why are you here?
Mm-hmm.
What's your purpose? What's your passion?
Mm-hmm.
And that's really important with ADHD, because with ADHD, you've got to get the brain properly switched on.
Mm-hmm.
It's been shown by when they've looked at what's going on inside the brain and they've done experiments, that if someone with ADHD is bored, a normal person will be able to do something that they find boring.
Mm-hmm.
And their brain will still produce dopamine. But the person with ADHD, their brain won't produce dopamine. In other words, they'll be falling asleep at the wheel, which is either dangerous or ineffective, right?
Right.
So Sarah was there, you know, and she was kind of coaching me, I suppose. And, you know, and we talked a lot about fear.
Mm-hmm.
And she quoted Anthony Robbins, Tony Robbins.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that many of your viewers have heard of him too.
Yeah.
And back when I was a kid, my mum had an Anthony Robbins tape set. This is in the back of day of tapes.
Right.
And again, just back then I did the same thing. I got the tapes and I went through all of these tapes and I took notes, which I kept until this very day.
Mm-hmm.
So despite having ADHD, I was still able to do stuff and focus when I wanted to, when I was motivated,
right.
when I was passionate and interested.
Right.
And so what happened was Sarah quoted Tony Robbins. She said, well, change happens when the fear of staying the same outweighs the fear of change.
Right.
And I think that was it. Every time that I wanted to back off from moving forward, Anthony Robbins quote, in Sarah's voice would play through my brain and say those words, and it would kind of push me forward, take another step.
Mm-hmm.
And so I applied voluntarily to work in a school with children with autism in a unit, in a mainstream school, but had a unit with children that had autism. And a lot of those had obviously ADHD as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned a lot. I loved the work. I loved the kids, loved the teachers. I learned a lot about nonverbal communication because some of these children didn't talk.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a profound experience because I learned about them, but also more about myself and my condition.
Right.
And this is kind of how it started. I went back to work. So that was 2009. So 2011 was when I had what I call my big breakthrough. I started to meditate every day.
Mm-hmm.
And exercise, but I was combining exercise with meditation because the philosopher Ken Wilber, who I'd come across, he was talking about what happens when you combine exercise with meditation, that it's much more powerful. Now, I previously had already been into meditation, but when I started to exercise and meditate together, what happened was I do my exercise and sit to meditate. My body was relaxed. My brain had slowed down. And I felt like I could just drop into meditation, focus like a laser beam for long periods of time. And magic started to happen. Things started to shift inside my brain. And I'd experienced some of these things before to some extent, but they seemed to stick now. It was almost like the exercise with the mental exercise and kind of mm-hmm. and the changes in my diet and thinking had kind of activated. It was like the right kind of recipe, which lit a flame inside myself. It's what I call the ADHD dynamite. It lit this flame, mm-hmm. and it was really powerful, and lots of things started to happen. Mm-hmm. In 2011, I came out of my depression. Mm-hmm. I had what I suppose people call an awakening, like a spiritual awakening kind of experience. So I was mm-hmm. sat in meditation, and just my sense of self just phew. And I looked back on my past and all the things I was upset about or depressed about, and it was like looking at someone else's story. It was like, wow, this is, it's like reading it in a book or someone else's story, and mm-hmm. I was able to kind of let go of it.
Yeah.
And the depression lifted, literally mm-hmm. like sunlight coming through the clouds. Mm-hmm. And so in that year, after 2.5 months of exercise and meditation, along with all the coaching I'd had and all the changes in my thinking, I just came out of it. And I went back to work. I started working with people with autism. Mm-hmm. And I also retrained as a hypnotherapist in the same year myself.
Okay.
Following in Sarah's footsteps. Mm-hmm. And it's brilliant, because it was like almost like what she encouraged me, and me meeting mm-hmm. her.
Yeah.
And it was, she'd passed that on to me, and I felt like she was waking me up, mm-hmm. and helping me to realize who I am. Mm-hmm. And then I was doing the same thing, then taking it forward for other people.
Else. Yeah.
And I started to help people with anxiety, depression and trauma. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There were a few people with ADHD that I helped, mm-hmm. and then further down the line I decided that it made sense that I should specialize. Mm-hmm. And that's really when things for me started to kind of really right. take off, my ability to focus, and I think it's because I really found my passion at a deeper level. Mm-hmm. And now that I've moved into this, you know, doing ADHD hypnosis, for me that's where the passion has come from.
Right.
Now it's everything's so much easier, and I'm so much more focused on what I do, and it just really, it's lit up the ADHD dynamite, as I call it. So mm-hmm. I believe a big part of ADHD is finding what you're passionate about, finding, understanding your values, your purpose, your passion, and your meaning in life, mm-hmm. and giving back to the community, being, you know, serving in some sense the community.
Right, right. And so what would you say? I know ADHD is really expansive. Is there a formula, or how would you describe it? If a person knows that they have, do they know they have it, or has it just been a diagnosed that they have it?
Okay, that's a good question. So when I was young, before mm-hmm. I got diagnosed, I had lots of nicknames for it. I used to refer to my ADHD as Hawk syndrome.
Okay.
Because there was a few years ago, I was reading a book on ADHD out in public in a park, I think it was, and a mother came up to me and she said, "Oh, my son's just being diagnosed with ADHD. And I saw you were reading that book." And then she said, "Would you meet him?" I talked about what I do, so she knew what I did. She's like, "Okay." Well, he walked over with, I think, a few other children, but I could tell who her boy was. And the reason I could tell who her boy was because the way he moved, when he would move his head, mm-hmm. and he did move his head around a lot, like he was what we would think of as distracted.
Right.
And what happens when you have ADHD, if something moves or you hear something, you're like a hawk. You kind of have to look, you just got to look at it. You really, you know? Mm-hmm. You really respond to it. And the head movements are very quick. It's kind of like that. Mm-hmm. So I observed that and I knew straight away, that's your son, Hawk syndrome. Mm-hmm. So that's what I called it way, way back. Mm-hmm. I also called it insatiability disorder. Okay. Because the thing about ADHD is people think, oh, they can't concentrate. No. If we're interested, we can concentrate really well. In fact, we can sometimes be like little crazy Einstein figures or Thomas Edison's that are, you know, that are, get really focused in on a subject. And we could just focus for hours and hours on that subject. Mm-hmm. And I've got one of the things I've always experienced is not only have I had a thirst for physical activity, i.e., oh, he's hyperactive, he needs to move, but a thirst for knowledge. So we often think of ADHD as being this need for movement, that kind of hyperactivity. But for me, it's also a thirst for knowledge. So I need to know the answers to the meaning of life, or something about psychology or whatever. I'm really, or hypnosis. I just become really fascinated, deeply fascinated, and I go really deep. And the other thing that my brain does, which is common in ADHD, but also dyslexia, and people with autism also do this strongly as well, is what I call connecting the dots. We see the big pattern. It's very strongly aware of the big pattern. And so it's like my brain will see lots of information. I won't necessarily go into a massive depth there, but like looking at bits of information, it's almost like my brain seems to run some calculation and it sees all these different things. And it can intuitively, I won't say conclusions, but have reach working hypotheses based on bits of information because it finds patterns. And so this has been wonderful, I suppose, as in therapy, because that's one of the skills that we need, isn't it? Is intuition and the ability to see patterns. And you don't necessarily know you've got it, but I think people, when they get diagnosed and they find out about it, they go, oh my God, that's me. It explains everything. Oh my God, yes, I've got ADHD. That's what they call it. But I don't really like the word ADHD. Hawk syndrome, insatiability disorder, or I like to think of us as hunters. But that's based in a guy called Thomas Hartman. I don't know if anyone's heard of him. And he had a theory that people with ADHD are kind of like, they're like hunters in a modern world. And in a hunting scenario, or as a hunter-gatherer, or a nomadic tribe, you move a lot, you collect your own food, you've got to be intuitive, you've got to be responsive and have a lot of energy. But in the modern world, it would be considered a negative thing. We would be hyperactive, we would be impulsive, we would that kind of stuff. And the extreme opposite of a hunter would be a farmer. They're aware of time, they're methodical, they're organized, and they're really responsible. So it's just like we're a different kind of we have a different kind of brain. And, you know, it's on a spectrum. And if the further you are down that end, the more likely you are to get a diagnosis. The more and more of a hunter you are, the more likely you are to kind of stand out and not fit into this particular environment. So I see ADHD as an environmental, it's partly caused by the environment. If someone with ADHD is in a different environment, they may not display those symptoms. Just to give a brief example of that, I met an entrepreneur that said to me one day, he said, do you know what? I think maybe I've got what you've got, that ADHD. He said, but I didn't get diagnosed. Oh, I said, why not? Tell me why you think that. And he said, he said, well, I was in a classroom with 30 children. I was the naughty kid in class, and I was always getting into trouble, and it was getting worse and worse and worse. But he said, my parents were well off, so he went to another country abroad, and in the classroom, it was only a small number of children. I think it was like 7 or 8. And the teacher let him stand up in class and walk around. And he went on to be a top student. And he went to university, did really well. He's now very successful. So it just goes to show that someone, when you switch an environment from that environment to that environment, they can go from the problem child to, you know, oh, this is my top student. And that's what I think of ADHD in most of the time. Of course, if it gets really extreme, you're really, you know, to that extreme, the more extreme that person's qualities are as a hunter, the further down they go, the more likely they are to be at what I call a poor fit between them and the environment, a mismatch. And the bigger that mismatch, the more likely they are to display symptoms, the more likely they are to have diagnosis. And then when it comes to treatment, it means the more challenging it will be for them to make improvements. So for example, if you, this is why treating some of ADHD when they're young is the best way to go. You don't want to wait until that child gets to 30, 40, 50, 60 with ADHD, find out they've got it, then get treated,
right,
because it's much more difficult to treat. If that child is treated early on, there's an early intervention, because there's more neuroplasticity in the brain,
right,
and the child hasn't had all of those kind of the negative experiences that come with ADHD, and then the labels and stuff that come from all those, all the complicated stuff that's going to pile up over time.
Right.
If you nip it in the bud, that child can go off on a very much, you know, go off on a another direction, and the process is much quicker with a younger person as well. So, I mean, if you think you've got it, you need to really, you know, you don't want to self-diagnose. But people only are only diagnosed if it creates a significant problem in multiple areas of their life, e.g. at work, school, at home, in relationships, and in different areas of your life. If it doesn't, then maybe you don't have ADHD. Maybe you just have similar challenges that people with ADHD have, because you can have a lot of the similar problems that someone with ADHD has and not necessarily have that condition. And that's why... if it is significant, there are significant challenges in your life, and they seem to be ADHD, that's why it's important to get a diagnosis.
Right.
Because A, you don't really know. Secondly, it could be something else. And if it's something else, then if you assume it's ADHD and go down that route, then you may not actually be able to successfully treat the symptoms. So, you see, so yeah, in that sense, a diagnosis can be helpful, just to be clear about what it is, and then you can take it from there.
Right. And so what do you think some of the challenges are that people in the workplace that are working and that maybe have ADHD, what do you think some of the challenges are if they're not treated or they don't get the diagnosis?
Right. Okay. So yeah, what are the challenges if they don't get the diagnosis? Like I say, there are people that may have what we think of as ADHD and have gotten through life without any issues or any problems that we can detect. Like the example I gave earlier of an entrepreneur. And there's plenty of other people I've met like that, often in the entrepreneurial field, funnily enough, because you get a lot of people with ADHD in the entrepreneurial field. They also make great inventors. It's similar to how, for example, sometimes you get people with autism. That maybe some of us think they'll don't want to be cliched here, but a lot of people with autism, they focus on one topic. It could be something quite intellectual, like math or science. And if they go to university, become like a professor in that field, they find a way to fit in, and no one would ever realize they've got autism as such, or they might not realize it. And, you know, that they might be happy as they are and they're getting on with their life. It's the same kind of thing with ADHD. But certainly, if there are a lot of symptoms there, and challenges, and there's a lot of stress and anxiety there, and the person's struggling, if they don't have a diagnosis, don't find out, and don't get treatment, then obviously, like I said earlier, what can happen is those problems will build up. And what happens is, through your life, you'll have the symptoms from the kind of the poor fit between yourself and the environment you're in.
Right.
And then you get the bad experiences. You get, for example, people with ADHD. I don't know the exact figures, but it's, I wish I'd remembered that, but it's something like people with ADHD are told off an extra, you know, tens of thousands of times in their lifetime. They go for a lot more, you know, people saying, oh, you forgot that again. And oh, why do you always do that? What's wrong with you? Are you stupid? All these kinds of things. And even when you then have the diagnosis of ADHD and other people know, they may not understand what that means. They may still think you're stupid. They may still, you will still be seen through. So what happened with, in the past was, in the past, people with ADHD were simply called stupid and lazy.
Right.
When we had medicine, like modern medicine, come about, and then ADHD became a thing and people could be diagnosed and have medication and this kind of thing. What happened was now ADHD wasn't lazy or stupid. It's now what we think of as a disorder. So it's like, oh, it's a real thing. It's biological. There's something going on inside your brain,
mm-hmm.
which is an improvement because now you're not necessarily lazy. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, it's not, or you're not necessarily being bad
mm-hmm.
or stupid. You can be clever and have ADHD. You can be lazy and have ADHD, but some of ADHD can also not be lazy, but still look like they're being lazy. But in fact, it's due to the ADHD. And so there's improvements in that sense. But then someone, as they go through life, if it's untreated, then it can just get worse and worse. And mm-hmm. what happens is on the top of the ADHD, you will then get poor self-esteem
mm-hmm.
because of your experiences and how other people are responding to you and how you think about yourself and all of the kind of the social side of it, mm-hmm. the negative kind of social interactions that will accrue over time. And then that happens and then you start to get another, it gets worse and then depression comes in. And of course, if let that process keep on going, it can just mm-hmm. get worse and worse. And a person can just get to a point a bit, I guess, like where I was in a sense, where I felt like nothing can ever change for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I can get out of ADHD hell. I'm stuck down here,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I've had clients come to me that have been diagnosed late
mm-hmm.
and it's often been very helpful for them. And then especially when they've also done hypnosis as well,
mm-hmm.
With or without medication, and they've surprised themselves,
mm-hmm.
the transformation they can have. And sometimes there's a really beautiful, deep healing process, for want of a better word, because one of the things that I've done is learn to realize that my past is the past. I can't change it.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
I can say, well, you know, if I didn't have ADHD, I would be here by now. I would be this kind of person
mm-hmm.
and then feel really look back on the past and just feel really upset, angry, depressed,
mm-hmm.
Regretful about the past. But I got to say, that's one of the worst places to be. And one of the worst things of ADHD, you don't want to be there. I understand why people get there,
right?
But you don't want to be there. And I've had this with clients where I help them like I did to move out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it can bring a tear to your eyes because it's like, wow, that is all true. And yeah, I could be here if that wasn't the case. But now I know what I know now.
Right.
And now I know that change is possible. It's mm-hmm. actually quite a wonderful place to be because it's like the way through it is compassion for yourself mm-hmm. and acceptance.
Yeah.
And that brings a deep healing.
Mm-hmm.
And a real sense of, say it, like, yeah, self-compassion, self-love.
Right.
Like you can then interact with yourself, what I call positive self-parenting, and just look back on your past and look at yourself now and say, yeah, you went through that and you didn't even know that you had that and you didn't have what you needed to get through that.
Mm-hmm.
But look at you now, look what you're doing now.
Right.
And give yourself a pat on the back.
Mm-hmm.
Or even as I've done, recommend as people in the lockdown, just giving yourself a self hug
mm-hmm.
can actually stimulate your vagus nerve and your parasympathetic nervous system to feel like, oh, I'm having a hug. You know, it's kind of like that. You're learning to love yourself and not to be, to live in the now, not in mm-hmm. the past, and say, wow. And it's like gratitude. It's like, wow, it mm-hmm. took a long time, but I'm not living in the past, but wow, yeah. I've done it.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful for this. And I don't care that I could be here and I'm not where I used to think I should be or mm-hmm. yeah, or could have been. I'm just happy for the fact that I'm now on this new journey
mm-hmm.
and I'm walking this new path with this sense of freedom mm-hmm. and forward movement. So what I teach my clients, as I taught myself and as Sarah right. taught me, is not to focus on the outcome.
Right.
Because that doesn't bring the happiness.
Yeah.
The happiness and the self-compassion comes through living in the now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the healing of the past comes as well. Being in the now
mm-hmm.
and knowing, wow, well, at least now I'm free. Now I understand. Now I'm moving forward. And that's a beautiful place to be.
Right, right. And so how do you, so you recommend hypnosis a lot for your clients then?
Well, that's my main thing. It's kind of like, I've always said, if people are not sure about hypnosis, I would happily just work with them without using hypnosis.
Right.
However, I don't see any reason to do that.
Right.
And it's never been the case that I've had to do that. And I've sometimes said it to people, but trust me, hypnosis is it's fun. It's enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once you experience it, you'd be like, how could I not want to do that? And right. It really is, I believe it's a really big part of how the changes occur, because we're not just working on a conscious level. We're really working on an unconscious level.
Yeah,
so how the brain works, how the brain works, you see, is that when we set a goal, when we create some kind of mental shift, or even when we're playing an instrument, what happens? Mm-hmm. We go to sleep that night and we have a dream.
Mm-hmm.
And when our brain is, when we're asleep, that's when our brain lays down those new neural networks in the brain to commit short-term to long-term memory. Well, right. Hypnosis is kind of similar. It's we're constructively choosing to activate a state that is similar to what happens when you're asleep. In REM, in what's called the REM state in sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, in the daytime, you daydream sometimes.
Right.
Or you might imagine things or talk to yourself or plan things out in your head. That's self-hypnosis, as far as I'm concerned. That is self-hypnosis. And it happens randomly, spontaneously, or you can choose to do it. So the only difference between the random and spontaneous and what we do in therapy is we get you into that daydream state. But it's constructive and it's positive. And because we do the whole coaching thing and talk about the change that you want, and how you're going to achieve that change, but then you just close your eyes and it's like going to sleep and you let your subconscious mind take over and turn your kind of like temporary thoughts,
right,
or your shift in thinking, and then create that change on a deeper level. You know, and commit it to what, in a sense, like long-term memory.
Right.
So it's kind of like, this is what I want. And now I'm just going to forget about that and give it over to the subconscious.
Right.
And that really works because I'm biased as a hypnotherapist. When I say that 90 to 99.9% of your mind is subconscious.
Right.
But neuroscientists say it too. And I mean, there'll be many experiments to demonstrate this, that we think that we're in control and that we're doing everything consciously. But most things occur subconsciously.
Right.
So it makes sense
to program it,
to work. Yeah. To work with the subconscious. Yeah. It's kind of like you're missing out on a lot of the juice, I think of there, you know?
Yeah.
But it's not unique to hypnosis, even amongst other forms of therapy, that there's still trance, there's still hypnosis in a sense, because even when we're talking like this and we have our eyes open, when we say the brain is brain and body is 90 to 99.9% unconscious or subconscious, that even applies when we're talking. You don't have to be asleep or have your eyes closed or hypnotized for that to be the case. It is the case right now. All the hypnosis does is it's the art of communicating to the subconscious, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah. So we're just by living in the present and not worrying about the future or anything, because you want to trance or program your unsubconscious to lead the way to what you want. And you just, as a person, just focus consciously on what's in front of you, not so much ahead of the game, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I do hypnosis and it's like a coaching process with hypnosis, solution focus hypnosis. But for example, there's this book here, Mindfulness Prescription for ADHD by Lydia Zailowska. And there's a few, like, you know, a few studies on things like that, like mindfulness. And mindfulness is what has been referred to as like the third wave of psychotherapy, in a sense, this these kinds of, yeah. you know, this whole thing about mindfulness therapy and mm-hmm. acceptance therapy. So when I work with people, mm-hmm. although I do the coaching, what do you want? Okay, mm-hmm. now let your subconscious help you to get what you want. Mm-hmm. I do that. But I do also work with people in the sense of accepting right. and mindfulness. Mm-hmm. So it's a kind of, it's a balance of the two. Mm-hmm. It's being in the now, accepting things as they are and being fully present, but mm-hmm. also looking at what you want and communicating that to your subconscious, and then it manifests in your future. So it's, I kind of do both. Right. And I feel like that's like a good balance, because one of the things about ADHD especially is that we actually do live in the now, funnily enough. It's all about the now.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we can also, mm-hmm. Just like anyone else, be very strongly in the future, like, you know, mm-hmm. or looking for another exciting experience. And that's why a mindfulness approach is about getting that person with ADHD to just to calm down, just be present in the moment, mm-hmm. and not to need to be in the future, not to need stimulation.
Right.
And what that does is, over time, it begins to rewire the brain, so that person is able to activate different circuits in the brain where they are able to, when you're able to be in the now, the what's paradoxical about this, you're able to work towards longer term rewards mm-hmm. versus short term rewards. Mm-hmm. So for example, computer gaming, mm-hmm. all that bam, 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 and you yeah. know, level one, level two, here we go. And you get feedback almost every second on a computer. Well, probably every second on a computer yeah. game. That's the reason why some kids with ADHD and adults can focus for hours on computer games. Mm-hmm. And they say, "What if your kid's got ADHD, how come they can sit on that computer game for 3 hours?" Mm-hmm. And that's because computer games give immediate reward. It right. stimulates the immediate reward part of the brain. Mm-hmm. But what something like mindfulness does, it teaches you to be in the now, mm-hmm. but not need to chase after anything.
Right.
It doesn't need to be any immediate reward. You're just sitting here. You don't need something. You know, it's not like, okay, you sit here for 5 minutes and I'll give you a marshmallow. It's not like that. So the more that someone with ADHD gets into that kind of activity, so it could be mindfulness, it could be, for example, with social media, mm-hmm. it could be pulling yourself away from social media, stopping yourself from going on social media on the evening or the morning
right.
would be good.
Right.
Keeping off your phone for at least 1 hour after you wake up mm-hmm. and 1 hour before bed.
Right.
Having a detox, a dopamine detox. Mm-hmm. So the paradox is that people with ADHD have low dopamine, but if they pull back and they have a dopamine detox and they start to get away from those experiences which give them that hyperstimulation, that immediate, it's like yeah. social media, for example, is just like computer games. Someone likes your post
yeah.
or someone dislikes your post, or mm-hmm. you see something pop up on the screen and you get on the screen and you get upset or angry, or yeah. or you're like, oh wow, the ADHD brain really responds to that for obvious reasons. But if that person can pull away from that and have some other experiences, you know. For example, I've started doing what I call my ADHD challenge. I set myself challenges. So my ADHD challenge at the moment is on a Sunday, mm-hmm. which I always believe is a day of rest.
Yeah.
So I thought, right, on a Sunday, I've got lovely woods here. Mm-hmm. Let's go to the woods and let's see how long I can just sit there with no phone, no computer, nothing to do, and just breathe, you know, get sunshine, listen to the birds, meditate mm-hmm. or whatever with a tree on a rock and just walk around. Mm-hmm. And I did that. And I think that the first time I did it, I did 6 hours.
Wow.
And it was wonderful. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, wow, next time I'm going to do that. And I think I could get up to, I reckon I can get up to a day. Mm-hmm. Now the more times that that's a bit of an extreme, but even if you start with something that, I mean, this is me after like years and years of progress with ADHD, but for someone that's just starting out with this, it could just be for the first hour that you wake up in the morning, mm-hmm. do not have your phone. Like, have your phone switched off. Yeah. Don't go on it for at least 1 hour. Right. And that will be a mini dopamine detox. Mm-hmm. So for that person, they can start to get benefits from that small habit that someone like me, with the progress I might start to see from doing something extreme, like sitting in the woods for 6 hours with right. no phone. It's just, and that's one of the things I teach with ADHD, which is necessary. And I had to learn that for myself mm-hmm. as well, which is you got to break it down into small chunks. Right. So we all scale it down. Let's start with something small mm-hmm. And take it from there. So right. yeah, so ban yourself from your phone for 1 hour in the morning. do that for 1 week
yeah.
and see what happens. You'd be quite surprised.
Yeah, yeah. I know somebody said to me, Mary Lynn, you wouldn't last very long without your phone or not. And I says, oh, you'd be very surprised. Anyway, I really enjoyed you telling us and educating us more about ADHD and your process and your healing process and how you're now living your purpose, helping others go through theirs and really making this world a kinder world and a greater expansion of the energy, the positive energy that we so much need in this world right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I really appreciate that. Thank you so much exactly. for your service. So, awesome.
Thank you. Thank yeah. you for having me here. It's been lovely to share yeah. and be here, and thank you yeah. for having me on. And yeah. yeah.
You have final words? You have any final words before we close?
There was something that did cross my mind, which was, so when I came across Thomas Hartmann and the hunter farmer mm-hmm. theory,
yeah.
which some people thought was silly and yeah. wasn't true, but 30 years later, psychiatrists did write him psychiatry organizations did write him an apology letter and said, wow, it turns out you're correct. People mm-hmm. with ADHD do have that gene in common with hunter-gatherer and nomadic tribes. So it's yeah. biologically confirmed. So then I started to think, oh, I'm a hunter. And we build these identities.
Right.
And one of the things that causes suffering in our world is when we get really, really identified with these, that's what identity means, right? Identified, yeah. but we can get really identified. You know, I'm male or I'm female or I'm this religion or I'm left or right mm-hmm. politics, all these kinds of things. And at the moment in the world, you can see there seems to be a lot of polarization around this. Yeah. And one of the things that I more recently experienced with ADHD is, okay, so I identify myself as being a hunter. Mm-hmm. And I now see people that don't have ADHD, they're like the farmers.
Yeah.
But of course, that's like a duality. It's like an either or. Mm-hmm. But the reality is it's a spectrum. Mm-hmm. And even when a person's right down this end of the spectrum or that end of the spectrum, I believe, and this is what we call epigenetics, that you still have the potential inside you, the qualities that the farmer has too. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, well, you are more of a hunter, but you're not 100% a hunter. You've got those other characteristics.
Yeah.
Right. So the next stage of this process for me was realizing, right. Okay. Understanding myself as a hunter really helps. There's another way of thinking about ADHD, which is better than attention deficit disorder.
Right. Right.
But the next stage was, oh, wow. So yeah, I'm a hunter, but I also have the farmer qualities mm-hmm. and I can tap into those as well. I can have like the best of both worlds. Mm-hmm. And in some sense that was part of a disidentification with the hunter identity. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is not dismissing it. It has its value and it's useful.
Right.
But I don't want to be too identified with it because the reality is that, that maybe I can have the best of both worlds.
Mm-hmm. It's more
and
of
I can
a balance.
Tap into those qualities. And if we apply that kind of thinking with our world, it can be like, I mean, we got stuff around lots of stuff about just gender, you know, between male and female and all the right. things we got around, you know, equality there. And it could be, well, okay, I'm a man. I identify as a man. But I'm also aware that within myself, it's like the yin and yang thing. I've got mm-hmm. what I could think of as more feminine qualities and a different side to me, and I can tap into that as well mm-hmm. and I don't think that makes me any less of a man but maybe more of a man mm-hmm. And so yeah, so that would be my a bit of a funny one there, but identity, I just think that there's so much more mm-hmm. to us than mm-hmm. than what we think, you know.
Yeah.
oh I'm ADHD. Oh, I'm a hunter. Oh, that's cool. And it's kind of like, oh, you know,
yeah.
we're much more vast than that.
Yeah. It's more of a balanced approach.
More potential as well. Once you realize that, then you can tap into these kind of different sides of yourself, I think.
Right. Well, I'm so glad that I had you on the call. And I was, like I was saying, I'm talking to my friend yesterday, and
she
has ADHD. And and so I said, oh, you'll be very interested to hear his, you know, our talk together. So I'm sure she'll listen in. But anyway, I really appreciate your coming on and explaining a little bit more, because I think it's very much of a mystery. Nobody really knows what to say and what to do about it, and what kind of treatments are available and how it can help other people, you know? Great. Well, I'm going to end off the call.
Thank you for having me on.
Thank you, Jamie, for joining us. We'll have to do it another, do an update or do another time or something like that. I'm sure people will be.
Yeah, if you want to, we certainly can. There's it's quite a lot to the topic, and it kind of goes, there's different, like you say, different treatments for ADHD. There's, that's definitely a subject that could be discussed. And how do you treat it? What is available to people? What are the options?
Right. Absolutely. And I totally believe in hypnosis and stuff like that as well. Yeah.
Excellent.
Okay, great. Thank you for joining us. And I'm going to say
goodbye. Thank you, everyone.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hard work at creating an impactful legacy, and obviously healing ourselves is creating an impactful legacy. And so I appreciate it. So be kind to each other, because that's all we have. So take care, everybody. And thank you again for joining us.
Thank you. Bye-bye.